life gets messy. Spills, stains, and kid chaos. But with Anabe, cleaning up is easy. Our sofas are fully machine washable, inside and out, so you never have to stress about messes again. Made with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics, that means fewer stains and more peace of mind. Designed for real life, our sofas feature changeable fabric covers, allowing you to refresh your style anytime. Need flexibility? Our modular design lets you rearrange your sofa effortlessly. Perfect for cozy apartments or spacious homes. Plus, they're earth-friendly and built to last. That's why over 200,000 happy customers have made the switch. Get early access to Black Friday pricing right now. Sofas start at just $699. Visit washablesofas.com now and bring home a sofa made for life. That's washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply. Now, so long, my friend. It's
time we began to laugh and cry. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy, and we thank them for their support. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Let's get to the music.
Okay. Well, no frills today, huh?
No, you don't know this, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Leonard Cohen.
I looked it up on iTunes this morning after you sent me an email, and I listened to it, and I was not really a fan.
Mikey's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
That doesn't mean I have to be a fan.
He's probably one of the best lyricists other than Bob Dylan in the last century.
We'll go 50.
We'll go two generations. He's a Canadian. He's 81 years old, Mr. Leonard Cohen.
Okay.
I always kind of like the guy.
The song's title was?
So Long, Marianne.
Okay, and how did you get to know that one?
My brother introduced me to Leonard in the late 60s. And I've always kind of paid attention to Leonard. And he's won a whole bunch of awards, and he's just a different cat. But you got to love Leonard Cohen.
Older or younger brother introduced you?
Older.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he was into him, and I remember one of the album jackets had this woman coming out of flames, flames shooting out of her, and that was the back of the jacket where the list of his songs were.
Does he still play?
Yes, he does.
Did you ever see him
on... in live, no.
No.
Seen him on various, I don't know. Every now and then he appears on a big show.
Would you want to see him live?
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
I think he's still swinging.
So is it just him and then he's got a band behind him?
I think so.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Leonard Cohen.
Okay.
Suzanne was another song. Just wild lyrics like Dylan, man.
I'm not related, I don't think.
Okay. Good.
I mean, maybe somewhere down the line, but not directly. But we got some more music to talk about. We went to that concert on Friday. We told the listeners about it on last week's podcast. We were going down to Appleton, to the Performing Arts Center, which I thought was a beautiful theater, by the way. Just a terrific venue. I was impressed with how modern it is, and I thought the acoustics were great. And we saw the Mac Avenue Superband, which is a jazz ensemble that I was a fan of, and I convinced Bob and Pat to go with me, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was a tremendous show, and I think you came around a little bit. You turned the corner a little.
Yeah, we were in row two, Mike, right in front.
Your recommendation, you wanted as close as we could get, and you were right. They were
row
great seats.
Row two. There was probably 1,000 there?
Yeah, I'd say that's about right.
It seats 2,000. I'm going to say like 800, but it was a frigid Friday night.
Freezing.
Like 0 degrees in Appleton. We drove down there, and... I had to get into it.
Sure.
I had never seen anything like this before. But after the first 15 minutes, I was clued into the personalities. We were right on top of these people. And Pat and I both, we came to really enjoy it.
Well, one of the things that Pat was telling me during the show, and I think it's true, and that you don't necessarily notice it because you can't notice it unless you see jazz live, is that there's a lot of communication during the songs that goes on in jazz, because guys will solo at different times and they'll cue somebody else or they'll play off each other. And when you listen to an album, obviously you can't see that because you're just listening. So to see their faces and the way they interact and their body language, I think it was really cool. And the fact that we were 4 feet from the stage, if that, was really neat.
Yeah. Who is the legend on the...
Gary Burton.
Yeah.
Plays the vibes. One of the best vibraphonists of all time. And for those who aren't familiar with the vibes, it looks similar to a xylophone, but it has this really cool sound. It's operated by a pedal, similar to the way you can use pedals when you play a piano with your feet there, and it changes the sound and the vibrato and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really cool sound, the vibraphone.
We had Christian McBride on the bass. We had Sean Jones on the trumpet.
Yep. Tia Fuller on saxophone. Christian Sands on piano. And Carl Allen, I think it was.
From Milwaukee.
Yeah, on drums.
He spent his first 2 years in college at Wisconsin Green Bay.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Carl.
After the show, he had a lot of locals there saying hello to him and stuff. So that was neat.
They drew a standing O.
Multiple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a night.
Yeah, it was a fun show.
At the Appleton PAC.
Yeah, really beautiful theater. For those of you who are ever interested in going to a show there, I was so impressed. And actually, I was looking on Twitter after, and the saxophonist posted a picture of the empty theater before the show started and put it on Twitter and said she was amazed at how nice the theater was. Called it a beautiful, beautiful venue. It's well-respected, and it was a good time.
Monday night, Pat and I went to see the UW Green Bay Phoenix defeat UW Milwaukee 70-68.
Men or women?
Men.
Okay. Was that your first Phoenix game this year?
Of the year, yeah. I was a former season ticket holder for 15 years during the Bennett years.
You printed your roster.
Certainly did. Stats for both clubs.
Okay. How was the game?
I didn't see a whole lot of people holding sheets like that, Mike.
It's because nobody does.
They're all holding a beer.
They're all holding these smartphones.
No, beer.
How was the game?
Outstanding. Horizon League, I love the league, you know. Green Bay or Milwaukee had two shots to win it at the end with threes. Both misfired, and they left the two-point loser. They had defeated Green Bay by one in Milwaukee, so.
How many people in the gym?
Announced at 36. I'm going to say 30.
What's it hold?
If the seats weren't blacked out,
yeah,
right around 10-5. But with as many seats as they got blacked out, I'll bet they're probably at 7,500.
So at the height of the Phoenix during your season ticket holding years, what would you say was the biggest crowd you saw in there?
They used to play at the Brown County Arena.
Oh, okay.
When I was a season ticket holder. And that seated 5,950, maybe 6 if they could cram it all in. And, Mike, in those years when Dick was coaching Tony Bennett, they probably averaged 54.
Okay.
It was a tougher ticket than the Packers by far.
Was that a cool gym? Like really loud and old school and clanky and rickety?
Yeah. It still stands there. Yeah. You could still play basketball there. I mean, I covered the sectional there for 15 years, you know, Division I and Division II sectional. Great memories in that place. Love the arena. Yep.
Very cool.
Built in 1957 on that one. Yep.
Phoenix any good this year?
They get up and down under Coach Link Darner, former guard for the Boilermakers.
Run and gun, right?
Completely.
Yeah.
Now, this was, I don't know, neither team. The first game was 95-94. This is 70-68.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like what he's doing.
Where'd you sit?
Row 4, kind of behind the Milwaukee bench.
Oh, okay.
I went over to Ticketstar and bought these tickets about 5-6 days before the game, and that was the lowest I could get. They were outstanding.
Cool. Very cool.
It was a good night.
Well, as of yesterday, we already know we've got another trip on the docket, Bob. We're going to Canton, huh?
Yeah, we are. What, Sunday night, August 7th?
August 7th, 7 p.m. Central kick for the Hall of Fame game between the Packers and the Colts. It was somewhat of a foregone conclusion, or I guess we should say an entirely foregone conclusion.
Yep.
With Brett Favre being enshrined and inducted that weekend, you know, the Packers were more than likely going to be there, and now they will. So an extra exhibition game now. 5 of them.
What a
thrill. Aaron Rodgers isn't too happy about that.
He's not the only one, Mike.
He posted something on Twitter yesterday that was pretty sarcastic about how, quote-unquote, excited he is to have an extra exhibition game. And our colleague Tom Silverstein had a pretty clever tweet on Twitter. He said, how much do you want to bet that Aaron Rodgers and Jordy Nelson play the same number of snaps as Brett Favre in that game? A big goose egg.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Aaron on that one.
Yeah.
No one's too excited, huh, Mike?
Tell you who's excited. Mr. B. Hundley.
Yeah.
A lot of play time for him.
Big night for him on National Tube, huh? Yeah.
But, I mean, as you saw, you put this out there on social media yesterday, there are some benefits to playing in that game and that they do get extra practices.
They do. That's right. A full extra week, yeah.
Which, I mean, higher risk for injury, sure, but for the young players, that could be invaluable, you know?
Completely invaluable, Mike.
I think so.
But it has no bearing on wins and losses.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, a little tiny bit.
But an extra week that the guys can be learning the system. I don't know. When you hear the young guys, all the rookies talk about how difficult it is for them and how they don't feel comfortable until toward the end of training camp, an extra week is an extra week.
So the readers are going to be reading very much about Mr. Brett Favre, aren't they, come the end of summer here?
You'll be writing a column or two, I bet.
Yeah, I suppose.
Cuts short that summer golf session, doesn't it, Bob? It might have taken 4 or 5 rounds off you.
What did Aaron say? He was stoked?
Yeah.
We're both stoked, Mike.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to the main item on today's docket, which last week we looked at the offense and went through Bob's season grades, and we discussed how everybody sort of performed this year. And today we're going to look at the defense and special teams. Let's get started with the defense. Bob, where do you want to begin?
Let's go with the D-line.
Okay.
We got to go D-line, linebackers, DB. It was ever thus, Mike.
Okay.
We must have the exact same order, okay?
If you say so.
Just like in basketball, Mike, if you're covering a basketball game and you're going to fill in a scorecard or something, you're going to, well, I don't know the positions nowadays, but I'm going to go forward, forward, center, guard, guard.
I'm going to go in numerical order.
Really?
Yeah.
Of the 5 starters?
No, you put the starters in the book.
Yeah. In what order? Numerical?
I don't know. It doesn't matter.
0, 1, 5, 18, and 27 or something?
I don't know. I guess.
Go forward, forward, center, guard, guard.
Why wouldn't you go center, forward, forward, guard, guard?
Because that's not the way it's done in basketball.
Well, that's descending order.
It's just the way it is.
Nobody plays with a center anymore anyway. It would be guard, 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 forward. 4-1.
All right. I'm not convinced of that. I mean, I can designate people a center, forward, forward. Okay.
I know.
All right, let's go to the D-line.
Okay.
We have 6 individuals. We have Josh Boyd. We'll lead it off in alphabetical order. Josh got an incomplete. He got hurt. He played the 3rd most snaps in the opener, 23.
Yeah.
Suffered a broken ankle on the 3rd snap in game 2, and that was it. He's got another year on his deal. What about Josh Boyd, Mike?
I kind of liked him a little bit, you know. I liked what I saw in camp. Really nice guy. Obviously, the hefty playing time in game 1 was influenced in part by suspensions to Dayton Jones and Latroy Guyon. But I do think it's important to note that he did get those reps, that they looked to him in that situation. So I think he's going to have an opportunity, you know. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Raji yet. Not sure what's going to happen, you know, with Ringo's development. I think Josh could maybe get a little time.
Modest, down-home, 310-pounder. Surprising quick twitch. All right, let's go to Mr. Mike Daniels.
Okay.
I gave him an A. I said he was the best player on the team this year. Formidable inside pass rusher, wins with raw power and never-quit attitude. 6'0" and 1/2". He's got a 2-arm punch on bull rushes, gets under the pads of blockers, jars them onto their heels. Played 67.9%. Led the unit in pressures. Career high tackles for loss, 6.5. Re-signed December 14th, 4 years, $41 million. All right, Mike?
Did you notice any, I didn't, but did you notice any change in the way he played after he signed the contract?
I can't really remember. I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't either. And I think that's a testament to him. You know, I was talking to Christian Ringo about a week and a half ago, and he said this is a guy that wants to go 100% on every single rep of practice and every single snap in the game. And if he can't go 100% or at least extremely close, he would rather just not play. That's just the way he wants to go about his business. And I think it's evident when you watch him on the field. I mean, the guy's a monster and, you know, a good bit of business, I think, by the Packers to sign him up, because there's no doubt he would have commanded more in the open market.
Encompassing leader on the field and in the locker room. Yep. He's got that going for him too, doesn't he?
Fiery guy.
Iowa Hawkeye, 4th-round pick. You never know, Mike. You just never know. That guy just had it in his heart and everything, and he won't be stopped.
Did this year's Hawkeyes team, do they have some prospects on it? The good team this year? I don't really know. I can't remember what Charlie said at Thanksgiving.
I'm just trying to rack my brain.
I think
here.
He said they had a corner, a young corner that was good.
Yeah, but he's going back in.
He's going back, okay.
Yep. I don't think they have much.
Okay.
Well, they're going to have a left tackle, but he's out. He's got another year or two.
Okay.
All right, next we got LaTroy Guyon.
Guyon.
I gave him a C+. You know, he missed three games, right, Mike? Yeah, three game suspension. Came back, didn't play good football at all for like 6 or 7 weeks. Just looked like a weightlifter more than a football player. Starting with game 14, he turned his year around. So he played five good games at the end, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Pass rush was a major disappointment. Just didn't get any of that done this year. Finished last in the division at his position in the all-North team. But he's very, very strong. He did some tremendous work in short yardage, and they just re-signed him.
Yeah, I mean, he is very solid against the run. And, you know, some of the plays that he made, you mentioned short yardage. It's unbelievable some of the plays he made down around the goal line at times this year, or whether it was fourth and one or third and one at different points in the field. His strength is just overwhelming in certain situations. Packers re-signed him to a three-year deal worth $11 million with $500,000 in guaranteed money, so they didn't risk a whole lot, and it'll be up to LaTroy to come back motivated and avoid any off-field off-season issues.
So they want him part of their team, and they got him.
Yep, and probably got him for cheaper than what they would have gotten with Raji, or what they may get with Raji in the future.
All right, let's go to Dayton Jones. I gave him a C. Starting in game 9, he played more snaps as an outside backer than he did as a DE,
yep.
163 to 149. You know, I really liked what he did early in the year. He stood out in games 5 and game 10, tapered off late. I mean, the scouts say this. They see a straight-line guy with no more than adequate speed, intensity, and toughness. He's adequate in those areas. He lacks breakdown sometimes when he does get a pressure to get the QB. How do you see Dayton?
I'm sort of more interested to see what he looks like when he comes back because, you know, the last conversation that I had with Dayton, which was the day that they clean out their lockers, he talked about really wanting to know ahead of time from the coaches what his role was going to be next season. He thought he adjusted okay, but he didn't really like that mid-season switch that you mentioned from defensive line to linebacker. Not because he didn't like the move in principle. He just thought it was difficult to adjust without having a training camp under his belt to work at both positions. So the reason I'm curious to see what he comes back like is because if they're interested in him to play as much outside linebacker as he did, I'm curious as to whether he shaves a few pounds off his frame at all, tries to get a little bit quicker maybe. Change anything that way because he is big. I mean, he's the same size as Peppers, mm-hmm. essentially, body type wise for outside linebacker, which is fine, but I don't think he's as quick as Peppers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dayton got a C. All right, Mike Pennell. I gave him a C+. Good second year for him. Stayed healthy again. He hasn't missed any time. Snap count went from 175 last year to 315 this year. He made strides reading blocking combinations. You could see that in August. He got off some things. He made some plays. Kept his pads down a little bit better. Doesn't stay blocked for long. People can get into him, but, you know, he doesn't stay blocked. Second to Guyon this this year, he led the team in tackles per snap. Led the D-line in tackles per snap. One every 8.3. Promising future.
Yeah, I mean, he's a massive, massive individual size-wise. And you saw just kind of what he's capable of. You remember that play? I can't remember. Was it the first Arizona game or the second one where he discarded that guy and just chucked him mm-hmm. for a sack on Carson Palmer? Mm-hmm. So there's some flashes there, but definitely young, definitely still learning, and you know he's got a ways to go.
All right, and the final member of the D-line is B.J. Raji. I gave him a B-. Started out like gangbusters, as if it was 2010 all over again. Dominated the Seahawks interior. Suffered a groin injury in Game 5, returned in Game 7, and just kind of held the fort the rest of the way. Started at nose tackle on the base. You know, 6 pressures only. In 2010, Mike, he had 33.5 pressures. This is how good a player he was in that second year when they won the Super Bowl.
That's insane.
He was an outstanding player that year. I've referred to that many times over the years, and I just look at that number, 33 and a half. And this is by my count, same criteria, same everything, nothing ever changes. He played 85% of the downs that year, Mike. He was so good they could not take him off the field. He was in really good shape. All right, he's going to be unrestricted come March. He's like 29 or so.
Yeah.
All right, what about Raji?
I think he's 30, actually.
Okay.
I think that groin injury probably bothered him a little bit more than we thought it did in the middle portion of the season. Started out, like you said, playing great football. He's another guy similar to Daniels in terms of the leadership that I think he brings in the locker room. Very well-respected guy, very well-spoken guy. Whether or not they bring him back, I think, is really up in the air right now. I think that Raji would have to agree to a deal that might be a little bit less, maybe, than what he could get on the rest of the market if he wanted to come back. I don't know. Just things to think about. You think we see him back? I don't know.
It's hard to say. It's like you pointed out how good this D-line group is this year in the draft. That's going to hurt his market. He's a dependable, disciplined guy with gap control.
Mm-hmm.
Capers said that. Turgovec said that. McCarthy has said that. A guy like that, I'd do what I could to bring this player back.
Would it deter you at all then to have arguably your two nose tackles, Guyon and Raji, both around the age of 30 or pushing 31? Because Guyon's 29, so his deal, if he completed it, would take him into his 30s. And I believe Raji is 30.
Not really.
It wouldn't bother you? Okay.
Mm-mm. I don't think so.
And Pinnell could play nose too, right? Didn't he play nose before? No?
Yeah, he can. He can.
Okay.
I don't like him at nose, but he certainly is. That might be his best position.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Christian Ringo off the practice squad,
sure.
Okay? You just talked to Christian. What'd you learn about him, and what do you see on this guy?
Yeah, Ringo is a guy that really sort of carved out a role on that practice squad as being a leader of that unit. And, you know, Jayron Elliott referred to him as the captain of that unit. Other guys that I talked to said that he's, you know, arguably one of the nicest guys in that locker room, especially when it came to the P squad. He would, any new members of that group throughout the season, he would pull them aside and sort of chat with them and say, hey, these are the do's and the don'ts of being here with the Packers. This is what the coaches really are sticklers for. These are some of the things that they don't value as highly. And, you know, really well-respected and well-liked by his teammates. He's similar in build to Mike Daniels. You know, that's the obvious comparison there, size-wise. He said he settled in at that three-tech position there. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. I don't know. The team's high on him, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They paid him the extra money, so, you know, mid-season or whatever.
Yep.
All right, let's go to the linebackers. We got 10 on the roster ending the season. All right, Sam Barrington. Entered the year ranked 15th on my most important player list. It looked like he was going to play every snap every game, Mike. And then he got hurt on the 16th snap of the opener, foot injury, had surgery, never played again. They're going to draft some people. Who knows, they might sign a guy. He's not big. He burns with intensity, shows pop. Only runs 4.76, stands 6.1. Could he be the answer?
I don't know. Does he play a little quicker than 4.7?
In terms of in the tackle box reactions,
yeah,
yes.
That's what I thought.
But to the sideline or in coverage, he is what he is.
And what did Jake Ryan run? Do you remember? I don't.
Right around that range, Mike.
Okay. So basically, if they want to move Matthews back outside, their choices of players on the roster would be Palmer, Barrington, or Ryan.
Right.
I would think that Barrington would come back and sort of solidify himself as long as he's healthy and having one of those spots, and Ryan most likely the other. But I just don't think that's enough. I mean, you got to bring in somebody else. I mean, Joe Thomas is there too, but he's not going to play every down for you. They got to do something at inside backer.
Agreed. All right, let's go to Jayron Elliott. Gave him a D+. 8 pressures in 174 snaps. 3 in 54 as a rookie. I didn't really see him make the second-year jump they hoped, but I don't think they're disappointed in him. On special teams, you know, he was really good his first year. I thought he was pretty good this year. He needs strength development. That's number one. He's just got to get stronger, both with bull rush, but primarily setting the edge against the run. All right, Jayrone Elliott.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of their key special teams players, you know, along with Chris Banjo, probably one of their two most important special teams players in terms of the number of snaps. I think that, you know, the injury near the end of the year obviously took away a ton of playing time from him in the last month of the season. You know, he showed the ability to make some plays early in the year, even if there wasn't a lot of consistency. There was, you know, one or two flashes each game where he did something impressive for the first 5-6 weeks of the season. But then his playing time sort of dissipated a little bit, and he'll be a guy fighting for time. But, you know, with uncertainty there with Neal and Perry and Peppers obviously not saying whether or not he's going to come back yet for another year, it could be an extremely important offseason for Jayrone.
Yep, no doubt. Got to get bigger. All right, Clay Matthews. I gave him a B-. He played a ton of snaps, 1,152 out of 1,189. He missed 37 snaps only, Mike. 74% inside, 23% outside. To me, he took one for the team. He spent a year and a half inside. He belongs outside. He's more dangerous, better outside. The problems he had in coverage this year, I mean, of the 12 pass plays of 20 yards or more allowed by linebackers, all the linebackers, he was responsible for 6.5.
Well, Darius Green got him on that touchdown in the Chargers game, I remember. And there were opportunities for more. I mean, the Vikings missed a wide-open one. Remember that in the season finale here?
Yeah.
They missed an opportunity with Matthews right in the end zone for what could have been a touchdown.
And there's just a lot of blows that were going on with Clay. And he's okay. And he'd probably be a little bit better, but he's a better outside backer. And, you know, they got to have him. I mean, they need outside pass rush, and they've just got to get this done so he can get back there. They've acknowledged that, and it's just got to get done. I mean, he's a great player.
Capers sounded a little reluctant, though, in the final press conference. McCarthy said he wants Matthews back outside, and Capers kind of said, well, we'll see. You know, I like Clay at the inside. He does a good job for us there.
Well, Capers doesn't know what they're going to do in the draft and free agency.
Right.
Maybe McCarthy has a better feel for that.
Could be true.
So, I don't know. How do you see Clay?
Clay was interesting. You know, I thought there was a significant change in the way that he performed, I think, in the first six games than the rest of the season. And, you know, after the first six games, there was legitimate talk about whether or not he would win the defensive MVP this year. With the stuff he was doing, the darting in and out at the line of scrimmage, the cat and mouse kind of games. And then he just kind of, I don't really know. Like, the games without tackles, he wasn't getting into the backfield as much. He certainly wasn't pressuring the quarterback as much. Things just kind of changed a little bit, and he certainly cooled off.
No doubt. Love his intensity. I don't know. I don't know what more to really say. I guess let's just go on. But
I agree with you. He's got to go back outside.
And just let him go his merry way and become a dominant rusher again. I think he can. He's not too old. His body's held up well. He played a ton of snaps this year. I think there's more wear and tear inside than outside.
No doubt.
That could be argued because the outside guys are battling tackles all the time.
But they don't have to deal with double teams as much and things up the middle. And
if there are double teams, they're from tight ends generally.
Right.
So I don't know. Okay. Andy Malumba. Gave Andy a D. Active for 7 games. He's going to be another year removed from ACL surgery in September of 2014. So if he makes it to August, he'll be challenged to hold a berth.
Yeah, Malumba was a guy that, you know, basically didn't play this season. I mean, you know, he got in a few snaps here and there. Didn't really seem to perform well enough to warrant consistent time on special teams either, which I think is a little bit of a cause for concern. I think it's going to be tough for him to make the team next year.
Okay. Mike Neal, I gave him a B-. Played the most snaps at outside backer, 731. Also played 97 snaps from a three-point stance, usually a DT in the dime. He goes all out. He's an all-out guy. Finished the year around weighing 255. Pass rush, 24.5 pressures, fourth on the entire team. He's a good player. He can win with his hand down because he's got takeoff. He's pretty darn good. He had a career high tackles for loss, Mike. 8.5. Good player.
Yeah, I agree. Good player. Always plays hard, no doubt. You don't never have to question his effort or anything like that. Another one of these unrestricted free agents. And whether or not he comes back is up in the air. Obviously, he's a little bit older than Perry, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. A little bit older than Perry. Still isn't he? And the bottom line is that he's still not totally comfortable, he says, at that outside linebacker mm-hmm. position. I think that's important to note. And he thinks that, this could just be a guy trying to be a salesman. But in his last conversation with the media, he said that he felt that even though statistically the production wasn't one of his strongest seasons, he felt that the way he played, the way he influenced games, the way he followed his assignments was very solid football. So who knows? Could be a guy trying to sell it. Maybe he really did feel that he was good this season. All right, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll come back up, wrap up the second half of the defense, and then head into special teams.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, Bob, where are we at now?
Nate Palmer. Nate Palmer inside. I gave him a D. He beat out Joe Thomas and Carl Bradford for the fourth job, and then he moved into the lineup when Barrington went down. For 10 games, game 2 through game 11, he played 478 to 45 for Jake Ryan. He was a little hesitant, and he struggled in coverage, and he got basically benched and never played another snap inside after that. Missed some tackles, did some good things. He's a pretty good big body. He's got a battle for the future now to stay around here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, obviously they made the choice to go with Jake Ryan, and there was just some tackling issues with Palmer. There were times where there were times where I thought that he got stuck behind bodies trying to make plays in the running game. Just wasn't really playing well enough at the time. Definitely has some good attributes, like you mentioned, but I think it's going to be tough again for him to try and earn playing time next year.
All right, Julius Peppers, I gave him a B. They cut his playing time this year. He averaged 50.2 snaps last year. This year, 43.8. Still a marvelous physical specimen. Hasn't missed a game since 07. That's impressive. Finished with 34 pressures, down from 43.5 a year ago. His number of takeaway plays crashed from 11 to 2. He's not as gung-ho as some players, but Packers seem pretty content with his effort and what he does. He's got 1 year left on his deal with a $7 million base salary. I think he'll be back. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think he'll be back as well. I think he's got one more year. He keeps saying every season, you ask him week 16, 17, he says, I feel good. My body's fine. I've said it before. I've said it to my friends, and I'll say it again. The guy is something of a genetic marvel. He's never had a surgery, never broken a bone. It's pretty, pretty incredible. And so for him to continue that healthy streak at the age of 36 is remarkable, and I think he'll be back. How effective will he be? You never know if eventually time is going to catch up with him, but he found ways to be productive in spurts this season.
All right, let's go to Nick Perry. Nick finished his fourth year. I gave him a C. Played a little bit less than last year. His production was up a little bit. He was better this year. His production in all the key areas was up.
He didn't play a lot of snaps.
404, Mike.
Yeah, 30-something percent. Low 30s.
Yeah.
Wasn't right. Very high.
Still hasn't played a full season because of injury. I think that's a concern. He's going to be unrestricted. He appears cumbersome and thick-legged running in space sometimes, but, he got after the Redskins' left tackle Trent Williams, the Pro Bowler, three times around that corner in that wild card playoff game, and that's going to probably earn him some money somewhere else.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. You've mentioned that almost immediately after the game against Washington. I know it's hard to put like a dollar amount, and if you can't put a dollar amount, just sort of conceptually, how much money do you think he made himself by that performance against Washington?
Well, I don't know what the UFA crop is like at outside backer. Let's just say he was in line for a two-year, $5 million contract without the Williams thing. Maybe a two-year, four mil total comp. Now let's say he gets a two-year, 5.5. I think it's that 1.5 million over 2 years, that game. You know, you're looking at last impressions or last the longest. Trent Williams in a big moment. That's pretty impressive.
It really was. It really was. And it wasn't as if he just beat him once. It was repeatedly. And in a short period of time, too. It's not like once in the first quarter and once in the fourth. It was, let's line up. You know that we're coming at you because you're behind and you need to pass. And I'm still going to beat you.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad.
Good point.
It was not bad.
So he's unrestricted, as we said. Okay, let's go to Jake Ryan. I gave Jake a C-. Did they get a starter in the fourth round? I don't know. They saw him start seven games. He played 329, so they got a heck of an offseason evaluation. He tried hard, played smart, seemed tough enough. He's also a step slow. He plays high, can't get off blockers too much of the time. Missed too many tackles, but he also got to a lot of stuff. One tackle every 5.8 snaps, more than twice the rate of Clay Matthews, and he paced all the inside backers. C-minus for Jake Ryan.
Yeah, what I like about Jake Ryan is that I don't think he was at all timid. I never got that sense from him. I thought he came up and made plays, and even if he wasn't in the right place, I think he just went to where he thought he was going to go without any sort of hesitation. And I do think that could be one of the knocks on Palmer, was that there was some hesitation. And when you talk to Nate, he would say that he needs to just react rather than think. But my big question with Ryan are two things. One is speed, and two is, can he cover? And I think that those are going to be really big question marks for him moving forward. Is he a starter? I'm not sure. Can he play for you in some capacity? I definitely think he can play.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fourth round. They passed up a bunch of inside backers earlier. They took Ryan in the fourth, so we'll see. All right, Joe Thomas, I gave him a D. He was cut in training camp, went to Dallas's practice squad. When the Packers saw that Palmer couldn't play in nickel and dime, and they didn't want Matthews and dime, they wanted him on the line rushing, well, they raided Dallas, and they signed Thomas off the Cowboy practice squad. Played immediately. I mean, he was the first team's first true dime linebacker in many years. Played 319. He had mixed reviews. Second most effective blitzer on the team. He did not have many mental blows. He's a pretty smart guy. He only missed three tackles, but he was off and on in coverage, times a step or two late reacting. He's a small school guy who's smart, South Carolina State. He'll be back in camp. I gave him a D.
Yeah, he's kind of an interesting one because obviously they brought him back to play a very specialized role. And there were some games where he was exposed. I remember very clearly his inability to tackle down near the goal line against Jamal Charles in that game against Kansas City. He got bowled over a couple times en route to a touchdown. There's some times, as you mentioned, that he's a step late in coverage, plays really hard. And I do think he gives you a little something on special teams. I don't think he's a bad teams player at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, let's go to the DBs. We got 12 of them. We'll start alphabetically with Mr. Chris Banjo. I gave him a C-. He assumed Jared Bush's role as the heart of the special teams, played more snaps on teams than anybody else, 375, had 24 tackles, nine more than the runner-up, Jeff Janis. He's fast. He runs mid-4.4s, Mike. He can really run. You see him cover ground on teams. Well, it's a great view from the press box on special teams. You know,
it really is, yeah.
You can see the speed and the range, and this guy has it. He's smart. He takes good angles. He doesn't stay blocked for very long. Now, from scrimmage, he played 102 from scrimmage when Burnett was hurt early. Didn't miss a tackle. Didn't have a bad play in coverage. Thing is, he's just short. He's 5'10".
Yeah, I asked Banjo, you mentioned his speed. I asked him once, I said, well, what did you run in college? And he said that he ran twice. And he said his best one was, you know, right around 4.4, like you said. And I said, well, what do you think you run now? And he actually thinks that he could run faster now. He thinks that in college, you know, the combination of weightlifting and, you know, the positioning and everything, he wasn't in the best shape and doesn't feel as fast as he is now. So maybe that's true, maybe it's not, but the guy can run. There's no doubt about it. And I remember at one point during the season, didn't you tell me that a scout told you that he thinks Banjo is, quote, a hell of a teams player, something to that effect?
Yeah, and he was getting a lot of double teams.
Yeah.
A special teams coach told me that.
Yeah, really smart guy, really good character guy. You know, this is what we've talked, you and I have talked about it. It's been written, tight end, inside linebacker, O-line, areas that the Packers are going to need to address. I think safety is an area that they're going to need to look to, for some depth, too. You've got your starters in Burnett and Clinton Dix, but you don't have Richardson anymore if his career is over, as it looks like it could be. And I'm not sold that Banjo can play a lot of safety reliably yet. I haven't seen enough of him, at least with my two eyes. So I wonder if they got to think about safety late in the draft or with, you know, a UFA or something like that.
Do you feel Hyde is a competent number three, or don't you?
Well,
really?
I do. I really do. I think Hyde is a competent number three, but I think that... So here's the thing. When Burnett was out with that calf problem, I think Hyde works okay when he's with Clinton Dix. I would not feel as comfortable if it was Hyde and Burnett. I think with the high level that Clinton Dix played, especially in the second half of the season, and the way he flies around sort of with a little bit of a reckless demeanor to him, I don't think Hyde can match that. But I do think he can come closer to replicating Burnett.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. But even still, let's say Hyde were to get hurt, and he got nicked up at times this year.
Yeah.
You're down to three safeties, and one of them is Banjo. I just would think that they'd like to have somebody else there. Because they went into the season with Richardson for a reason.
True, but I think Banjo has a spot on this team.
Oh, I agree.
Right?
I agree.
So you're
but saying... But I'm
saying,
do you want a
five.
Fourth... leave Hyde with the corners and the DBs. Do you want a fourth guy who can just play safety for you?
Okay.
Maybe
all
a really
right.
good teams player who could also play safety.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Morgan Burnett. I gave him a B. Patient, studious. He runs the show. I mean, the Green Bay coaches say that constantly. He runs the show. He runs the defense. He had a calf injury early, knocked him out of five of the first six games. Played all but seven snaps the rest of the way. Led the secondary in tackles per snap, one every 9.3, missed eight, down from an average of 13.3 in his first 4 years. More effective in the box, shutout and interceptions, that's a blot. He's only got two picks in the last 3 years. He allowed just one half of a touchdown pass, the least amount by a Packers starting safety since Leroy Butler and later Bao Ju didn't allow any at strong safety in 01. Just gave up three plays of 20 yards or more. That was major improvement from his coverage deficiencies of 2011 to 2013.
Yeah, you know, Morgan is really, really solid. I think that just in the communication, there's a big benefit to having him back there. There's no doubt that there's a lot of chemistry between him and Clinton Dix. Solid player, solid season.
Yep. All right, haha, Clinton Dix. I gave him a B+. I mean, the numbers just really tell it. He had 9 misses this year compared to 16, which led the team as a rookie in 2013. And he sliced his yield of 20 yards or more, those plays, from 8.5 to 3. He had too many blows his rookie year. You know, you could chalk that up to being a rookie, but, I mean, when you play at Auburn and are coached by Nick Saban, that's like a pro environment, so I didn't really give him a break on that. He needs to get more takeaways. He was down to, he had 4 this year. He was a good pressure player, 1 every 5.5, led the team. He's durable. He's played a heck of a lot of snaps. He made significant strides this year, and he got a B+.
Yeah, I agree. And our colleague Tom Silverstein wrote a real nice story about Clinton Dix toward the end of the year and the way that his development has allowed Capers to use those two guys, Burnett and Clinton Dix, almost interchangeably. One can play in the box. One can play deep. They can flip-flop. They can play games where one starts out and the other one rushes in at the last minute. So I thought he had a very nice season and definitely played this season like a first-round pick.
All right, Robertson Daniel, gave him an incomplete. I'm going to give a few hard numbers on the guy, and then you just talk to him, Mike. You take it all. He's 6'1", 207, 4.46 speed, 35.5-inch vertical jump. He did 24 reps on the bench. Outstanding. and he scored 11 on the Wunderlich. So take it away, Mike.
Yeah, so Daniel's a guy that played at BYU, made a change from safety to corner in the National Football League, started with the Raiders, was pretty surprised that he went undrafted. He wasn't unrealistic and thought he would be a high-round pick, but he did think he could get into that 6th or 7th round area. Didn't do it, signed as a UFA with Oakland, made it all the way till the end of training camp, and then got cut. The Packers scooped him up, and I can tell you that they're high on him. They like him a lot. He's got really good size, similar to Ladarius Gunter. But he's quick. I mean, you know, Gunter runs, what, in that 4.6 range?
Yeah.
And Robertson's in the mid-4.4s. And he's lost about 15 pounds since he first signed with the Packers. So he could be even faster now. Plays brutally relentless press man coverage. That's what he's going to win at, and that's what he's going to lose at. He's just going to go up there, and he's going to play press man and see what happens. Really fascinating guy to talk to. Really forceful the way he talks. Kind of reminded me of the stories that you and Tyler used to tell me about Barrington, you know, when he was on the team during the season. So he's going to have a chance to make this team next year, no doubt about it.
Okay. Dimitri Goodson gave him a D+. Third in special teams tackles with 12. He was a really good gunner, along with Jeff Janis. Played 74 snaps from scrimmage. 49 came at Carolina when injury struck. He gave up a long touchdown pass to Philly Brown. He's tough. He's tenacious. He's probably fast enough. He's a former basketball player, and it shows.
Yeah, I mean, he thinks he'll have an opportunity to compete for the cornerback positions next year, legitimate playing time. There's no doubt the team likes what he does on special teams. He plays really aggressively. He's a mild-mannered guy. Very, you know, soothing presence when you talk to him in the locker room. But he's feisty out on the field, and that's what Joe Witt really likes about him.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Ladarius Gunter, I gave him a D. Played a little bit less than Goodson from scrimmage, 39 snaps. Didn't play much on special teams, just 59 snaps. I thought at times some of his deficiencies in speed were costly in open field situations. You know, he ran around 4.67, Mike, but he played better than that, certainly at cornerback in August. He's a willing worker. He's got those long arms, and he likes to get after it.
Yeah. You know, he's a guy, you know, he's kind of an interesting one because we heard so much about him in camp, you know, with the way he was playing and everything. Mm-hmm. First player with multiple interceptions of Aaron Rodgers in practices. Really played well in some of the exhibition games. I think it was that New England game that he played really well, the very first one, or was it Pittsburgh, the second one? I can't remember. But he had one really strong exhibition game, and then he just sort of disappeared. There was a point in time, I think it was against San Diego, after Philip Rivers threw for 500, where Joe Witt said that he chickened out, and he should have played Gunter, but Joe couldn't pull the trigger, meaning Joe chickened out, not Gunter.
Mm-hmm.
And we never really saw much of him after that. But the team likes him. They like what he does, his physicality. And, boy, his arms are long.
Yeah. So he'll be back. All right, Casey Hayward, I gave him a C-. He played 88.1% of the downs. He was a steadying influence for people, and he usually was where he was supposed to be. Normally they'd re-sign him, but with all these young prospects at corner, including the aforementioned Robertson Daniel, I doubt very much if they're going to sign him. I think he's going to get probably really good money. I don't think it's a very good year at UFA cornerback. He should get pretty good cash. He gave up too many plays of 20 yards or more this year. He gave up 9. He was not physical in the bump zone. Susceptible outside. He's got a speed deficiency when he's playing outside on takeoff routes. Third on the team in tackles with 88, but he also led the team in misses with 14. No interceptions, just 9 passes broken up in 1,048 snaps. That's last in PBUs per snap. I don't know, Mike. He's had injuries. He used to get to the ball all the time. I mean, that was his calling card. He has instincts. He has feel. He was a ball magnet. Joe Witt used to call him that many times. It just didn't happen anymore, and I don't really know why. He was just kind of out there as a steadying guy, a steady guy. But steady's not good enough, you know, and I'm pretty sure he's gone.
Yeah, he had an important role this season because Sam Shields, the true number one corner, is such a quiet and non-vocal guy that Hayward assumed the leadership position in that cornerback's room when it came to Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins. So that was an important role for him. He fancies himself one of the best inside corners in the league, but he still thinks he deserves a chance and wants a chance to play on the outside somewhere. And I said to him, would you be tempted to come back to the Packers if they said to you, we want you back, but you're only going to play inside? And he paused and he said, that's actually a really good question. I hadn't really thought of it. And then he paused again and he said, I still want that chance to play outside. So to me, that was sort of an indication that he's probably not going to be here because they've got Shields and Randall and they've got Rollins. We'll see. It'll be interesting. But I think, like you, if he leaves, I think he's going to get some decent money somewhere.
Yep. All right, Micah Hyde, I got him for a C-. You know, at times in space situations, shallow crosses, digs, his speed shows up, 4.57. It's not real good. But he has a return dimension. He's got special teams, physicality. He can play safety, certainly. He was okay at safety starting for the injured Burnett. He had a rough year in coverage. He had a team-high 4.5 touchdown passes allowed. He also allowed 5 passes of 20 yards or more. And he didn't break a punt return all year. I gave him a C-.
Yeah, I was never really as high on Hyde as you were this season. His struggles in coverage, I thought, were, you know, really, really well documented. And he just could not cover tight ends. He's too slow. He played okay at safety, as you mentioned. I think that there was a lot of value by the coaching staff on his ability to field punts. But I thought his returns were more or less pathetic at times this year. He's so slow. He's got a role. There's no doubt he can do a lot of things and he's versatile, but I don't know. I think he was given the benefit of the doubt in a lot of areas this season when perhaps they could have gotten lifts from other people.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, Mike, let's go to Demaryius Randall. I gave him a C. Worked his way ahead of Hayward after about a month, then became entrenched as the starter at left corner. Played 73.4%, led the team in picks with 4. Played with remarkable confidence for a rookie. And you can talk about that, Mike. You wrote that great story on the guy. The longer the season went, the more he got beat. He allowed a team-high 12.5 plays of 20 yards or more, the most by a Packer corner since Tremont Williams gave up 16.5 in 2011. He blew the coverage on Larry Fitzgerald's 75-yard reception in overtime. It cost him the playoff game. He needs to tackle better and become tougher.
Yeah, he's a guy that never lacks for confidence in any situation. I think he was pretty beat up physically by the end of the season. I think I can think of at least 4 or 5 games where he had to miss 2-3 snaps because he was, either winded or had some, took a big shot or whatever it may be. So I think his body was pretty sore by the end of the year. He's definitely got to get better in some areas. Amari Cooper exposed him pretty darn well in that game at Oakland. I think his attitude is perfect for a cornerback, the way he is a little bit defiant, a little bit, you're not better than me. I don't care who you are. I think he's just got the right temperament, and I think he'll be better next year.
I like what he says. I like his demeanor, his body language. I think he has to toughen up. This in and out of the lineup or being down, I just don't see that. All right, let's go to Sean Richardson. Incomplete. Suffered a herniated disc in the cervical area of his spine in October. Packers have not officially announced that his career is over, but sources have told us for months that it is over. Sean Richardson, a former strong safety. Mike?
Yeah, not too much to say about him, really. There were games where he played in the 20s in the snaps before he got hurt, and then there were games where he played in the single digits. Seemed to have a role in that big Oaky package that they used at times, but I wasn't really wild about what I saw on very, very limited basis. He would have been a special teams leader for him.
Yep. Quentin Rollins, gave him a C. Took until mid-year before he gained full health, and then he moved past Hyde in the nickel. When Shields missed 4.5 games, he played extensively at right corner. In all, he played 30%, offered promise of an outstanding future. He's a hitter, a ball hawk, and a rugged, effective blitzer. His rate of passes defensed in the entire of the 7 cornerbacks, ranked number 1. His rate of tackles, ranked number 1. However, he did drop 4 picks.
Yeah, definitely had some issues catching balls that, you know, definitely should have been interceptions. Some more difficult than others, but he certainly dropped some easy ones as well. I was amazed when I went back last week and I was filling in all my snap counts for the week by week. I didn't realize that he was a complete non-factor until like 5 or 6 games left in the regular season. I guess when these weeks start to blend together, you don't realize that. So that just shows you how well he came on near the end of the year. Because, I mean, there were games where he started opposite Randall, you know, with Shields injured. And I like him a lot, too. He's got a completely different temperament from Randall, but I kind of like his demeanor, too. Mm-hmm. That quiet, thoughtful guy, plays really hard. And I don't think he's bad on teams, either.
No. So Randall and Rollins both got C's, and the arrow's up on both. All right, Sam Shields, I gave him an A-, second highest grade on the team. I don't think there was no A on offense, no.
No.
So the A for Daniels, A- for Daniels. Shields,
yep.
Right.
Yep.
Missed the equivalent of 6 games, concussion, shoulder injury. He yielded three plays of 20 yards or more. He averaged 8.9 in his first 5 years. Let me just say this. In the previous 21 years, no starting cornerback ever gave up as few 20-plus plays as Shields 3. Now, he missed quite a bit of time, but still, it just shows how solid this guy was in coverage. He can play press man without over-the-top help, and that gives Capers freedom with safeties. He intercepted just 3, and he dropped 5. He only was penalized once all year, Mike.
Wow.
Once.
I didn't realize that.
He's never going to be a strong tackler, but, you know, he missed 9 this year, which isn't great, but it was better from 13 in 2014 and 12 in 2013.
Yeah. I mean, Shields is a key part of this defense. You talk about Matthews. You talk about Mike Daniels. I think you could argue that Shields is an anchor just as much as they are in certain ways in terms of what it allows Capers to do.
All right. That's it for the D.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with the special teams.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, let's move to the special teams. What do we got, Bob?
We got 4 of them this year, Mike. We got Mason Crosby with a B-. The only negative, game-winning situation against Detroit, 52 yards, 5 seconds left. Horribly low and short. And the Lions left with their first victory in Lambeau in 24 years. All right, that was bad. He tied for 15th in the league in field goal accuracy, 85.7. Then he went 4-for-4 in the playoffs. His other misses were from 44, 41, and 49. The 49 was blocked because of Guyon. He batted 1,000 on extra points, 41 of 41 counting the playoffs. He's a really good kicker, and this has to be their top priority to get him back.
No doubt. He had one of the better years of his career, and he's going to make a lot of money because of it. There's really not much else to say. He was great.
Brett Good. Brett, I gave a C. The game at Oakland was his 137th in a row since taking over those snapper duties from injured J.J. Jansen in 2008. I talked to J.J. at the Super Bowl. He remembers this. He's still good friends with Brett Good and Crosby. Torn ACL in that first quarter against Oakland. He's now an unrestricted free agent. He had ACL surgery. That's it.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. Do they want to go with him? Do they want to go with the new guy? And that's what we've got next.
Mr. Rick Lovato picked him up off a sandwich shop in New Jersey. Old Dominion, they went with a rookie. There was a couple vets on the street. They took a shot at Lovato, and it worked. He did a nice job. He was provided young, cheap alternative. I gave him a C.
Got to put more weight on his frame, I would think, a little bit this offseason. Maybe another 5-10 pounds.
Yep.
Could be as much as 15. He's a little on the light side.
Okay. Tim Mastey, I
Eat
gave him...
Eat some more of those sandwiches, maybe.
Tim Mastey, I gave him a C. He broke the team's net punting record, 40.4. That thing had held for 52 years. Jerry Norton, 39-2. 89 punts. The opponent's long return was 23 yards. He kicked directionally all year per instructions from Ron Zook, and it worked. He bounced back from his worst season, 37.0 net, with possibly his best. Didn't mean he didn't have some poor punts. He definitely had some poor punts. He didn't get it done in the playoffs. His average hang time of 4.09 was down a little bit from last year and way down from 2012 when he averaged 4.35. These are all by my count. 25th in gross average, 23rd in touchback rate, 31st in inside the 20. He does not do that enough. He had one fake, and he had no bad holes this year.
Yeah, I think the holding thing was interesting, too. You know, I think that's impressive that he can go the whole year without any issues there, especially on the extra points and field goals combined. You know, he had his fair share of poor punts. And, you know, I saw when I tweeted out that we were doing a podcast today, one of the first things that was asked is, you know, how much was Maste's success in net punt a result of better coverage than kicks, you know? And I think it's a fair question. He kicked well at times. He kicked poorly at times.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's your 2015 Green Bay Packers in review.
All right, we got to take one or two really quick questions because we've once again gone way over our time limit here, and we're going to start boring you soon.
Long-winded, aren't we, Mike?
Yeah, let's see. Well, we sort of talked about this a little bit, but we can just revisit it a little deeper here. This question comes from a Youper, Bob.
Yes.
Will Green Bay focus on building depth at inside linebacker or rely on Barrington to settle the matter? To settle matters.
I think
it's going to be a little bit of both. I think they're going to give Barrington a chance, but I also think they're going to have to bring in a couple fresh bodies at the position.
I agree 100%.
Okay. Let's see. What else do we have here? Well, let's talk about that question that I just mentioned. This comes from Brad Beck. Brad wants to know, how much better did Jeff Janis make Tim Maste this year? I think, first of all, you know, Janis was a remarkable gunner for them at times, and let's not discount some of the other gunners that played well this year. Rollins, I thought, showed some flashes, and I thought Demetri Goodson played well at times. There's no doubt Maste was aided by those guys. Some of the plays they made were tremendous. And I think that was a real strength of this special teams were coverage units this year.
I agree. We just discussed Maste at length, his performance, and I really like Goodson too.
Yeah,
you know, primarily Goodson and Janis, right? Mm-hmm. And they were very good at what they did.
Yeah,
they were worthy successor to Jarrett Bush.
Do you think? Do you think they'll bring in another punter to compete with Maste the way they did this year with Cody Mandel?
I don't know.
It's tough to say.
They could draft one.
They could.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah.
They really could.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. We appreciate those of you who sent in the questions. What do we got for music on the way out, Bob? Remind us.
Leonard Cohen. And, Mike, I'm encouraging you to give Leonard a listen. The lyrics, man. It's in the lyrics. The guy can bring it.
Amarillo by morning.
This is Leonard Cohen, man.
I know.
All right.
I'm just messing with you. All right, well, we thank you all for listening. This podcast was brought to you by Cannon and Dunphy. We thank them for their support, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Now, so long, Marianne. It's time that we began to...
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.